This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
In this workshop, we're going to be talking about ways to grow into resilience and hope as women. And we want to think about a vision or ways to think about about growth that enables us to grow, to aim at something. Because if we don't aim at something, we don't become anything. So we have to aim at something in order to grow resilience and hope. And I realize that for many of us women in our circles, we often serve in hidden, lonely, and mundane places where no one notices, maybe except for your family or your husband, or if you're single, you have workplaces, but we're often not out front where a lot of people are. So how can we be women who are growing in resilience and living with purpose? Like, what does it take to become a woman of strength? Like, who can step into hard places without despairing or demanding that life be a certain way? How can we work against this instant gratification or this entitlement that we deserve something better than what we're actually getting? So these are the questions that I held in front of me as I prepared for this workshop. So that's what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to be talking about the aspect of where, why, and how. How do we grow? Where do we grow? And why do we grow? And what we're going to do is I took three people, and I'm going to be telling you about three people that have had difficult relationships and hardships, and they grew into resilience and hope. So the first person, I'm sorry, I forgot something here. So the verse that I'm going to anchor our talk on is in Proverbs 29:18, where it says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he." So we have to have a vision. We have to aim at something so that we can become godly, so that we can become women of strength. So the first person that we're going to talk about is Gina Lee Nardella. And she was born in California in January of 1982 to Gus and Diane Lee. And she grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. She was exposed to a lot of diversity among race, gender, social, and economic differences. And one thing that Gina's parents were really protective of her, like they protected her, and they just tried their best to make sure that she would have the best possible experience to be something, to grow into a resilient woman. And they lived in a very wealthy neighborhood. And so she lived in what I would call a privileged home. And one day she and her mother went to eat in a restaurant, and they were walking down a street, and there was this tall black man, and he had sunken eyes, and she heard him say, "I'm hungry, I'm hungry." And everybody just walked right past him, and they wouldn't give him food. And so she and her mother went to a restaurant, and she ordered a hamburger, and she couldn't eat her hamburger. And her mother said, "Please eat your hamburger." And she said, "No, I can't. I want a box." And so she got a box, and she told her mother that, "I want to go find this black man." But when they went back, she couldn't find him. And that man just kept right in front of her eyes, and that just changed the whole trajectory of her life. And so what gave this privileged girl the heart to save the less privileged people? That's what she ended up doing then. And so we want to talk more about her life later. So another person that we want to talk about is Anthony Ray Hinton. He came from a challenging home. He was born in 1956 in Birmingham, Alabama. He was black. He was a man. And he grew up in the Deep South where the white people did not like black people. And he came from a family of nine. His father died when he was a young child. And his mother, she was really, really a determined woman. She did not baby her children. She taught them when they win a game, they remain calm. And if they lose a game, they remain calm. Because if you lose a game and you show a temper tantrum, you lose twice. And so Ray, he learned that at a very young age. And so, but there was this bad experience that he had. And so when he was 29, he ended up in prison for 30 years for a crime he did not commit. What kept this man alive? Like, what kept him, like, what made him grow into a resilient man? So the third person that we want to talk to about is Joe Rantz. He came from a very dysfunctional home. He was born in 1914 in the state of Washington, and when he was four, his mother died of cancer. And at the age of five, his father put him on a train all by himself and shipped him all the way to Pennsylvania. He was 5 years old. And his father fled to Canada. And then eventually his father remarried, but he married a woman that was 17 years younger than he was. And so he brought Joe back home, and Joe lived with him and his mother, his stepmother, but his stepmother did not like Joe. And so when he was 10, she told her husband, that he cannot live at home anymore. And so he had to go live with their school teacher, and he chopped wood and to pay for his way. Joe, he dealt with more adversity and trauma than many people face in their lifetime. What enabled Joe to face that kind of trauma and actually not only survive, he thrived? Like, what enabled Gina, Ray, and Joe? Like, Gina came from a privileged home, Ray came from a challenging home, and Joe came from a dysfunctional home. But all three of them were able to thrive and grow into resilience. Like, what made that possible? So the first thing that we want to talk about is we want to talk about the aspect of why. Why grow into resilience and hope? So, but before we do that, can you hear that buzz? So I think she wanted to do something. So before we dive into why, we want to just look at the definition of resilience. So resilience has the idea that the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties, toughness, and ladies, it's just a given that we're going to have difficulty. Like, we will have difficulty. And so then resilience has the idea of someone who can weather difficulties and be tough in a way that enables them to recover and keep going. So that's the idea of resilience. And then hope is the idea to cherish a desire with anticipation to want something to happen. Like today, I hoped this workshop would go well. It was something I anticipated. And a verse that I thought would go well with this is 1 Corinthians 15:58, where it says, "Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in hope." So we want to be women that can grow in hidden places in our everyday lives. So the first aspect of why is God designed us to be life givers and not consumers. So now we're going to go back to the life of Gina. So she got her driver's license at 16, and she drove to their local Red Cross shelter, and she asked if she could volunteer in the nursery. And they said they don't need any help in the nursery, that that they need help in the kitchen. Can you help in the kitchen? And so she said, sure. So she went into the kitchen, and there was bread there, and there was meat, and there was cheese. And the lady said, I want you to make 300 sandwiches out of this, out of the bread, the meat, and the cheese in an hour and a half. And she was there by herself. And so she went to work. She was 16 years old. And an hour and a half, she had 300 sandwiches made. Like, what enabled her to do that? She was 16 years old. And so what she did then is she continued working at the shelter until she was through high school. And every evening, she would go home and she would journal about her experience. And she would read the passages from Matthew where Jesus told his followers that the kingdom of God is for those who fed him when he was hungry, who gave him something to drink when he was thirsty, who clothed him when he was naked, and who offered shelter when he was a stranger. She became the hands and feet of Jesus as she worked in that shelter for 4 years during her high school years. And she was the kind of woman that was a life giver instead of a consumer. So we want to be the kind of women that we can be life givers and not consumers. Another aspect of why that we want to talk about is it demonstrate God's power and beauty. So we're going to be talking about Ray from high school, about Ray again. So he graduated from high school and began working in the coal mine. He hated his work. So at the age of 24, he decided he's going to quit his job. He doesn't need to work in the coal mine. And so what happened was he had to have a car to get any other job. And so one Saturday, Ray went to a car dealer, and he asked the people if he could take a car for a drive. And so he took the car on a drive, and he never took it back. He just took it home. And he drove this car for 2 years. And then one day he heard that his friend told him that the police are looking for him. And so he got really fearful, and he didn't know what to do. And so he decided to confide in his mother. And so she he told her his whole story, and then this is what she said to him. Remember, she was a no-nonsense woman. And she said, are you sorry? Ray was sorry. She asked him if he was going to make it right. He wanted to make it right. His wife, mother, said, you go to the police station and you tell them everything and you face the music. I didn't raise you to take something that don't belong to you, but I did raise you to admit you're wrong. You are not a boy anymore. I cannot protect you from this. You admit you're wrong to the police, and then you admit your wrongs to God. He will forgive you, and so will I. Ray, you need to choose what sort of man you're going to be. You need to choose who you will become right now. And so he went to the police. He told them everything. He did jail time. He got out of jail, and he had a lifetime buddy named Lester. And so he told Lester after he got out, he said, I'm never going to steal anything that's not mine. I'm not going to be a consumer. I'm going to be a life giver. So when we do the hard thing of waiting, like if he could have just waited for a couple years, he could have had money to buy the car, but he didn't want to wait. And so this is how I worded it. The kingdom of God needs adults with grit, not two-year-olds with temper tantrum. So sometimes we don't want to do the hard thing, and so we pout or we show throw big temper tantrums, I don't know. But we want to be women that that are life givers and not consumers. And I, one thing that I really admired about Ray is that he did not turn to shame and guilt. He faced it head on, and I think that's what grew him to be a life giver. All right, so the second aspect of that we want to explore is where. So one place is in hidden places, which we're fairly familiar with that. So now I'm going to tell you a little story about Joe. So when Joe was 15, life was very hard because that was the days of the Depression. And one rainy day at the age of 15, he came home from school and his family car was all loaded. They were all sitting inside the car except for Ray. And his dad informed him that they're going to move to a bigger town and Joe cannot go with them. He has to stay there. And so at the age of 15, he had to stay there in an unfinished house. And so when they drove out of the lane, he went into his house, into their house, and he laid down on the bed for a very, very long time. But then he got up and he made himself something to drink, eat. And then he remembered something that his father taught him. And that was this, that there was a solution to every problem. And Joe became very resourceful in finding food and taking care of himself. He worked as a logger and he formed a local band to support himself. And despite the difficulties of living alone, he was very popular in school. He began dating Choice, who encouraged him, and then later became his wife. And then at the end of his high school, his brother Fred invited him to finish the last year of high school, his senior year, in Seattle, where he lived. And so he moved in with his older brother Fred, and he went to Roosevelt High School, which was a very prominent high school in that day. And then he graduated with honors, which is really amazing. Like, he came from a dysfunctional home, but he graduated with honors. And then he attended the University of Washington, and this is where he began his rowing career. So, and this is a very grueling thing rowing in that day was, and so 180 boys showed up for the rowing sports, and by October, only 80 boys were left. The others all left because they didn't have the resilience to stay in it. But Joe, he was really suited for the hard work. His dysfunctional home trained him to be strong and to take care of himself and to endure pain. Joe learned to endure pain. So I think resilience is growing when we do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, even if it's painful. That's how resilience is growing. We just keep at it because that's what gives us internal strength and courage. Developing resilience in the hidden places is not for the faint of heart. And this, because he kept at it, he became one of the best rowers in his day. Another aspect of where we grow resilience is in suffering. So I keep switching back and forth. I hope you can follow my thoughts. So now we're talking about Ray. So after Ray stint in college, life became normal again. He had a good cleaning job at a warehouse at a night shift. And during the weekends, he had his pick of women. He loved women. He dated two sisters, one openly, one on the sly. And the sister he dated on the sly told Ray that she turned down a white man by the name of Reggie for a date with him. Ray was so proud of that. Women were Ray's greatest weakness. Life was good until the age of 29. He looked up and he stared at two white policemen. They were not smiling. He stopped the lawnmower and went over and asked what he could do for them. They told him he's under arrest. And all he could tell his mama was that they were the police and he knows he did nothing wrong. And the police said that is what all black men say. They do not do anything wrong. And later Ray told them that he had was told that he murdered two fast food managers and hurt a third one. This really caused Ray to suffer because he knew he was innocent. He could not understand how he was charged with this murder. Like, there's a lot of black men in his town, and he could not understand why they nailed him. So his suffering was deep. In suffering, we grow resilience and hope when we hang on to what is true in difficult circumstances. So when we're in difficult circumstances, it is really key that we hang on to what is true. Because when truth becomes murky, we tend to lose hope and we tend to go in despair. And he hung on to this hope of good, because he knew he was innocent. And so he thought he could talk himself out of this. So Ray kept telling the officers that he is innocent. And then a couple of days later, a white police officer told Ray, "You are under arrest for first-degree kidnapping, first-degree robbery, and first-degree attempted murder." Ray said, "Sir, you got the wrong person." The officer said, "Man, we are not done with you yet. There's going to be more charges. You know, I don't care if you did or didn't kill these three men. It doesn't matter because one of your brothers did," meaning another black man. "And you are the man to take the rap for your brothers. You want to know why? Because, number one, you are black. Number two, a white man is going to tell you you shot three managers. Three, you're going to have a white district attorney. Four, you're going to have a white judge. Five, you're going to have an all-white jury. Six, you will be convicted." This really shook up Ray. And when Ray saw that he had no chance, he asked if he could take a lie detector. And after taking the test, he heard a female guard asking the examiner what the results were. And this is what she said: "If I could go by this test, he would walk out here with me right now. He shows no signs of deception. He did not do it. He does not know anything about these murders. I can tell you that." The truth meant nothing. Every day felt like being in the middle of a dream. During this crisis, there's one thing that was really helpful for Joe, and that was he knew he was innocent. He believed God was good despite the lies the police were pinning on him. He clung to the hope and kept his sanity because he knew he was innocently being accused. So resilience is built when we cling to the truth about God's sovereignty. We have to remember that God is good in our times of crisis. So the third aspect that we want to explore is suffering. I'll just leave it up for just a little bit and then you can get that. So how? The first aspect of how that we want to explore is grow in community. So now we're going to go back and talk about Gina. When she was small, she was shy. And one summer, her grandparents paid for her to go to a summer camp for 4 years. And she decided to take the easiest sport that she could do, and because she wanted to make sure that she would win. And so she did that for 3 weeks. She was there for four. And then in the fourth week, her counselor said, "You need to push yourself." And so she was told she had to climb a 13-foot mountain with 9 other girls. She cried all night. She begged not to go. Her tears did not move the counselor, nothing. The next morning, she packed her back, a backpack, and she struggled to get the backpack on her back. And so 2 girls helped her. And the first couple days, she stayed way in the back, and she felt alone. She felt really sorry for herself. And when they were at 10,000 feet, she decided she can't go any further. She sat down. And so the girls were up ahead. And so 2 girls climbed back down, and they came to help her. And this is what they said. "Look how far you have already come. We totally believe in you." The other girls rallied around her because they were a team. They knew they either all got to the top or no one went to the top. And she eventually mustered up enough courage to climb the last 3,000 feet. And what she learned was that she had internal strength, and she learned perseverance from the seasoned mountain travelers. So I believe that we are stronger together, and we learn from each other's strength. Like, we're not called to go alone in this world. We're called to do life together. So living in community, Gina just recognized the value of teamwork. She went back to the summer camp for the next 6 years, and what those summer camps did for her is they prepared for her for a job that involved living in places with no water, indoor toilets, or electricity. She learned how to get dirty, how to cook over a fire, and she learned to pace herself and to travel light. So if we want to grow into resilience and hope, we must immerse ourselves into community life and learn from those around us. The second aspect of how that we want to explore is take small steps. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting my clicker. Okay, so I'm gonna forget that again for a little bit so you can get that. In Gina's junior and senior year in college, she attended numerous lectures that taught her about poverty and the devastating HIV bacteria. And so she had this idea. She was really, she had a lot of resilience. And so she said, "I can wipe out poverty and I can wipe out AIDS in Africa." And then eventually Gina connected with the Grammy Award-winning band Jars of Clay, and their values and mission matched Gina's. She graduated from college and she moved to Nashville, Tennessee and lived with the band, Jars of Clay. She felt totally out of her comfort zone, traveling with a band of all men and raising money for their nonprofit organization called Blood Water. Raising money was very difficult, and so they finally decided that they were going to just ask all their concert people to donate only $1 each, and finally they had enough money to build their first well, and they were all so excited. And shortly after building the first well, Gina realized something really key. She realized that saving all of Africa from unclean water was not even possible. This created a crisis for her. So 4 years into starting the organization at the age of 21, she began wrestling with her identity. She felt like she didn't really have the tools needed to work with this kind of crisis. So she finally came to understand that we don't seek love to win. We seek to love for love itself. And this truth freed her to stay and do the hard thing. she understood the value of focusing on one village and then noticing particular changes in this village instead of just having all these villages that she was gonna change. This way of living meant she did not feel the rush of serving as she once did. Gina learned that to be effective, she had to break down her vision until she had one focus. When she felt overwhelmed, she knew her vision wasn't broken down enough. It wasn't broken down in manageable steps that she could actually move ahead. So small steps made her vision manageable and enabled her to effectively lead out and do the hard things to keep the organization going. Living out a vision effectively means breaking it down to one focus and then stepping into the hard places. Because we can't step into all the hard places, but we can step into one hard place. Gina was able to be effective because God was there in the form of friends who came along to share the load. We are not called to change the world. We are called to love the world. We're not called to change it. We're called to love the world. Gina lived in a privileged home, which gave her the courage and vision to build a nonprofit organization at the age of 22. However, her privileged home did not automatically give her endless resilience. She still had to learn how to keep going. And she could not trust in her own ability. She had to trust in God's ability to grow blood water. The third aspect that we want to explore of how that we want to explore is be honest with yourself. So now we're going to jump back to Joe. Joe graduated from high school. He went directly into college. In Joe's first year, his dad moved to Seattle, close to where he was living with his brother Fred. And Joe was very happy about that. He was like, now I can actually build a relationship with his dad. But his stepmother refused to let that happen. And this really created a struggle for Joe. And his personal life directly affected his ability to row and to trust the other rowers in the boat. And so there was an older man by the name of Pocock. He built a relationship with Joe. And one day, Pocock pulled Joe aside, and this is what he said to him. There are times it looks like you believe you're the only man in the boat. When a man rows like this, he is bound to attack the water rather than work with it. What matters more than how hard a man rows is how well he harmonizes with what the other fellows are doing in the boat. A man cannot harmonize with his crewmates unless he opens his heart to them. He has to care about the crew. Joe, you cannot give yourself to just rowing. You need to give yourself to your crewmates, even if it means getting your feelings hurt. If you don't like some fellow in your boat, you have to learn to like him. It has to matter to you whether he wins the race, not just whether you win the race. Joe, be careful not to lose this opportunity. This advice transformed Joe's life, and he began to trust his team and how he rode. The thing is, Joe did not have that kind of self-awareness. Like, we don't have that kind of self-awareness in ourselves. Joe didn't either, but it's when Pocock had the courage to speak truth to him, that's when he discovered he didn't actually trust people. So we often need other people around us to help us grow and become strong, resilient women. And we grow trust by taking one small step at a time. And regardless of what kind of home we come from, we can choose to trust in one person and then another person, and then another person, and that's how we grow in trust and resilience. So an aspect of to grow resilience and hope is to be honest with ourselves and those around us. The fourth aspect of how that we want to explore is face your fears. So Joe and the other boys in the boat had to face their fears. They shared their personal struggles and fears with each other. They had to care about personal issues and about team dynamics because this affected how well they worked together as a team. Joe, he feared that he was this weak link in the boat. There was 9 boys in the boat, and he feared he was the weak link. He shared this fear, and what he learned was they all feared that they were the weak link. This was really amazing to him. He just didn't expect that they would fear that. So as they faced their fears in each other, their trust ran deep. Finally, the day arrived. They were in Germany and the Olympics in 1936. But the boys, the day of the race, they faced a lot of stress. They had just lots of odd things stacked against them. They battled choppy water, and they got off to a bad start, and they fell behind. And the boys got all stressed. You know, that's what we do when we can't get it to work. But they had a lead boy by the name of Mosh. And he had been trained to face his fears and stay calm under pressure, under stress. And then all at once, Mosh noticed that the boy right and behind him was all white. And he was like, oh my word, like, what do I do? And so what he did is he didn't panic, but he said, pick up your rowing stroke. And just like that, the boys picked up their stroke. The boy that was about to pass out, he did right along with the others, and they began to row in sync, in harmony. And they were like 2 boats behind, and gradually they kept moving ahead, and they were able to finish in the lead by 1 second. They won the race by a mere second because they have learned to build trust with each other and work as a team. By trusting those closest to us, we will feel like we are part of the bigger narrative of God's story instead of individual stories. So we really do need to open ourselves up to those around us and just name the fears, because we're going to discover we're all alike. I mean, it might be a little different, but it's still somewhat the same. So by facing our fears with those closest to us, it enables us to grow in resilience and hope. Show empathy. Another how is to show empathy. Now we're going to finish up Ray. We're going to go back to him. So during the trial, Ray was surprised to see Reggie. He was the white man that got the girl that was turned down. Reggie stood up and he began to testify against against Ray, and Ray was so surprised. And what he learned was that Reggie had been brewing for 4 years over the girl who turned him down for a black man. Reggie was bitter. For a reward of $5,000, Reggie told the police that Ray had murdered 2 white managers and injured another one. And he fabricated a story about running into Ray the day that his manager had been killed. Ray deeply regretted that he had ever dated a girl on the sly. Reggie and the lawyer, they created a story that there was just no logic. They twisted everything all up, and Ray could do nothing. He didn't have the money to hire a lawyer, and he was convicted of murder. He was sentenced to death row in the worst prison in Alabama. He was slammed in a 5x7 cell, which consisted of a bed, a toilet, 4 walls, no light. He was so bitter that when he got in that room, he threw his Bible underneath the bed. He didn't talk to anyone except for mom and his buddy Lester for 3 years. And daily he really feared being executed. And during this difficult season for Ray, he had a revelation from God. And this revelation was a turning point, and it was this. For the last 3 years, he had dwelled on despair, hatred, and anger rather than on hope, faith, and compassion. And this revelation was a turning point. And then right after that, Ray heard a man down the hall crying, and he just filled up with empathy for this man. And then all at once the man stopped crying and everything was silent, and he grew really scared because he thought that the man was probably killing himself. And so finally he just opened up, he just stood up and he said, hey, how's it going down there? What happened? And the man said, I just lost my mother. She just died. And what he discovered was that by showing empathy, it will change those around us as well as change us. I think that's another way how we grow resilience and hope. Another aspect of how is to embrace change. So Ray, he began to change because he had received a revelation from God. He remembered that he was born for a purpose of serving God. His vision was to lessen the suffering of other human beings. And Ray told the crying man that he now has his mom in heaven arguing his case before God. And just like that, the man laughed. And that's the first time Joe heard laughter in the death row there. And Ray, the men worked hard to survive, and they showed each other compassion. And when somebody was executed, they would all bang on their bars and they would say, "We believe in you," and they would do their names, and so that the inmate wouldn't have to die alone. And this revelation from God turned his whole life around. He began to trust God. Life had meaning. He didn't want to die anymore. So embracing change has a rippling effect of changing our circumstances and the way we make our choices. So don't forget that our changes has a ripple effect. It does affect those around us. And the last thing I have is trust God. So this is now about myself. Last fall, the REACH Committee asked me to begin working on this workshop. And I absolutely had no brain space because I was struggling with some health issues. And so I just went to my supervisor and I said, "Look, I just want out. I do not want to do this workshop." And he says, "No, we're not going to let you do that. You're going to feel better by now when the event actually happens." And I said, "I don't have any brain space to prepare for this." And so he asked me to ask Anita for help. So we talked for a little bit, and she made this outline that I used today. And then I knew I wanted a PowerPoint, and so I asked Tina if she would develop the PowerPoint. So she made the PowerPoint for me. And then 3 weeks ago, I was asked to teach a woman's Sunday school class, and they said I could do anything I wanted because it was short notice. And so I asked them to give me ideas on the topic, how to grow resilience and hope, and that was the inspiration I needed to do this topic. You know, I felt so ashamed that I needed so much help. I'm grateful that I did not let the shame keep me from developing this, because I did need to learn more about resilience and hope. So we grow in resilience and hope when we create a vision and trust and love those around us. Trusting God means that we catch the vision to enter the bigger narratives of God's story. If we do not enter God's bigger story, we perish. Our vision is to serve the Lord God with all our heart, mind, and soul. If we don't do that, we perish. Gina, Ray, and Joe were able to grow in resilience and hope because of their ability to trust the people around them and to trust God's goodness. So my prayer for you all is that you can do the hard things in life and that you all grow in resilience and hope. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.